to me, the cannabis business has developed into such, it's a great example of community level capitalism working well.
I'm scared to close my eyes. I'm scared to open them.
Hi, I'm Tim Cavanaugh for Reason TV. We're here with Heather Donahue, author of the new memoir of Northern California pot growers, Grow Girl. Thanks, Heather. Good to have you with us.
Thanks
and,
for having me.
And let's explain a little bit about your history. What got you into going from being an LA actress to going up to North?
In my 20s, I was an actress, most notably in the Blair Witch Project, also in several other things, but that tends to overshadow the rest.
By the way, I think of you as really the as Manticore's best picture. The great underrated Manticore.
Oh, the great underrated Manticore, which I actually, see, this was the thing about the acting gig. Even while I was doing these movies that might not have been shining
I'll
cinematic
stand up
moment.
For Manticore. You know, they made Bulgaria look pretty much like occupation-era Iraq.
Right.
And it had a good concept. The concept of the movie was that the looting of the Baghdad Museum had led to the unleashing of some curse
mythical,
from the pagan
mythical
tomb.
Mythical twin beasts.
Exactly. Yeah, the problem was the beast was a really poor effect,
oh,
and they chose not to go
so
the Blair Witch.
Bad.
Yeah, it just,
oh, the beast
it
was
just
terrible.
Didn't look right, but check out Manticore. But anyway, let's get back to growing pot.
As my career progressed, I realized I wasn't really getting to do things that I was very proud of or that I really wanted to put into the world. And I had this long-standing meditation practice, and part of that was this idea of right livelihood. Like the idea that you are doing something in the world each day, and it should probably be good. I went to a meditation retreat. This guy sat down next to me, introduced himself. I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "Nugget Town." And it was this town that I'd been to 7 years before that I had completely fallen in love with, but I couldn't figure out what people did for work up there. So I was like, that's amazing, but what do you do? And he's like, "I grow pot." And I thought to myself, all right, that sounds fascinating. So I went up and I was his apprentice for a while, and I just fell in love with it.
In your author's note in the book, you noted that all these people are legal within the gray area created by California law.
Right.
The federal government differs with that notion. How do people feel about the way the economy and the legal structure is changing?
I think there is a little bit of a fatalistic thing going on there. Things are going to happen. Things are going to change. And the best position to be in is an agile one.
Right. Okay.
So just that whole Darwin quote, it's not the most intelligent species that survive, nor the strongest, but the ones most responsive to change.
I find you're never more agile either than when you're in a field full of pot. What do you think of the way, since the transition to the Obama administration and the Holder Justice Department, it seems as a Californian that raids are up, that medical pot tolerance is down from even where it was before 2008. How has it affected people up there?
The tolerance is not down among the people and the patients.
We've seen lots of dispensaries raided in LA in the last 2 years.
Right, but that's not really reflecting the sentiment of the citizens of California. That's
reflecting federal
policy.
No,
yeah.
Even the classic NIMBYs like the LA Weekly and the LA Times have pretty much thrown in the towel on this idea that dispensaries are magnets for crime and all that garbage. I mean,
because there's absolutely nothing that supports that.
It helps when the dispensary is the only business that's still open on every corner in the city.
Well, there's that. Like, I don't understand why a city council would want to squash thriving entrepreneurship in such a terrible economy.
Yeah,
because I also feel like when LA was hitting its high hundreds, it was just going to be a matter of time before patients, pardon my pun, but weeded them out. You know,
yeah.
Like the fly-by-night operations were not going to be places where, say, women felt comfortable going into. So eventually, you're going to lose that business, and you're only going to have the ones that really are providing good patient care that survive.
Talk a little bit about what you have to look forward to if you're a farmer and you get arrested.
And there are a lot of families that are really being torn apart by prohibition. There's this woman in Oklahoma called Patricia Spotted Crow who has four kids. And she sold a $31 bag of weed while her kids were home, and now she's in prison. And that's what just blows my mind of why we think this policy is working. With marijuana still being a Schedule I drug, we're not even getting to really test it and understand why it's working in the ways it does. There was this show called Weed Wars on Discovery like a month ago, and there was this kid with really terrible epilepsy. There's a tremendous amount of anecdotal evidence that it's really effective on epilepsy, and this family had tried everything for their four-year-old son. So finally, the father's desperate. He comes in, gets a tincture of non-psychoactive high CBD strain called Harlequin. and gives it to his son, the seizures are reduced immediately. Why would we not test this? Why would we let families like this suffer? It doesn't make any sense.
The consumer choice aspect of it. You go to the pharmacy now and they have all sorts of varieties. This one's good if you're, you know, you have to do any writing.
Sativas.
That's what they tell me.
Yes, yeah, sativas are good for writing. Yeah. Because you have so many choices of different dispensaries you can go to, you want to go to a place that you know is lab testing their medicine, that you know is dealing with responsible growers, that you know provides a community service and is a good community member. We don't always have that information about some other places that we spend our money, but certainly in the cannabis business,
right.
We do. To me, the cannabis business has developed into it's a great example of community level capitalism working well. And I, as much as I'm for legalization, as much as I think prohibition has created more problems, way more problems than it's ever solved, I am concerned about broad spectrum legalization causing this business to leave the mom and pop hands that it's been in for decades.
Would that be because in a full legalization environment, you'd then have to meet a bunch of new requirements as a small grower? In this weird way, being in the shadows shields you from the FDA, it shields you from the USDA, or whoever, you know, there's a million people, and California is no slouch in terms of finding ways to put people out of business.
A mom and pop would not be able to fund FDA regulations. You would completely crush the business and make it only possible for corporations to compete in it. That's why I think looking at how California is running this business right now is pretty illuminating, because it is working. It is saying the patients want regulation. The dispensaries are responding by self-regulating in a really responsible way that doesn't come with that overriding enormous infrastructure of something like the FDA.
When you were saying before what California has done with its pot industry, what we're really talking about is what Californians have done on their own, really, and the state, to its credit, has mostly just stepped back, and that's what's made the big difference, right?
This is an industry that has been for a very long time now of the people, for the people, and by the people, and I would really hate to see that change.
Starting with George Washington, by the way, the first pot farmer.
Yep. Now, they were all those gentlemen were growing cannabis. It's a very useful, versatile crop.
Absolutely, yeah.
So useful that it could replace a lot of commodities that are currently produced by very large companies.
Our sales would not have functioned in the War of 1812. We would have lost the naval war if it hadn't been for the hemp that we were using.
that's actually true.
In some ways, are we better off with just with things being in the gray area? I mean, there's always a case to be made for you're better off being an outlaw than trying to stay within the system.
By creating a gray area, you're actually creating a system that works. This is not an overblown system. This is a system on a human scale, and that's part of why it works so well. This is not outside the law. This is what our country should look like. We should have community level capitalism that can be sustained by our families and our people, not these big abstract douches whose pockets we all line.
Sure. As a libertarian, though, I just have to ask the follow-up. Would deregulation on a vast scale be the way to get where you're talking about?
I think because we don't really have deregulation on a vast scale in any sector of this economy, it would be very unfair to put the onus of deregulation wholeheartedly on this industry.
What's next? What do you, you've written your I Am Not Spock book, so yeah. Now what's...
That's actually a really, yes, I guess this is my I Am Not Spock book. I have two more nonfiction books that I'm developing and a novel, and because the publishing industry is in a little bit of trouble. I'm also developing it for television, Grow Girl for television.
All those years in flat Hollywood didn't tell you that the writers are lower than whale crap?
Yeah, but it all works out fine as long as you don't live in L.A.
Well, it was great talking to you. Heather Donahue, author of Grow Girl. For Reason TV, I'm Tim Cavanaugh.